Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. On the line, I got my main man, Josh Cohen, coming out of Ottawa.
What's happening?
And I got hashtag the return, hashtag comeback season, hashtag it's now hoodie season. Coming back on the line, my man, Rajan Walia. Welcome back.
Oh, man, it's been too long. It's like the longest off season. I'm like Boogie making my return.
Oh, man, that's a lot of hype. You're going to have to put Peacemaker between me and Josh once in a while then.
So who's Draymond?
Pass. I'd rather be the 7-footer that's good at everything else on the floor.
No, it's definitely you. You're definitely Draymond. You throw your hissy fits.
You little bitch. All right?
I'm leaving for New York now.
All right. So it's been a couple of weeks since we've done this. Obviously, there's a lot to catch up on, but I want to start in Washington because Woj dropped a little bit of a bomb this morning after their awful start. The Wizards are contemplating blowing it up now that apparently John Wall and Bradley Beal are available for a trade. What the hell is happening with this team? How is this management still there?
I think it's because the owner cares more about the Capitals than he does the Wizards. So he's kept the exact same general manager on for I think about 8 or 10 years now. And Washington's been on the treadmill for basically 8 or 10 years, and now they're paying the luxury tax. And the owner said that he expected this team to be a 50-win team this year and go to the Eastern Conference Finals. And now that they see that this team is nowhere near that, they're looking to finally make a change.
And I think it's overdue as well. Like, you're looking at a team that's had the core pretty much the same, mainly being Beal and Wall. And they've had some playoff success, but they've really never been a strong contender in the East, especially with LeBron being there. And now they're looking at their salary cap with Wall expected to make $47 million against the cap hit in 5 years. Like, they're looking at pretty much a rebuild because, as you guys mentioned, like, they're a treadmill team. Like, they're not a top four team in the East.
The question is, how the hell do you get rid of John Wall's contract? Like, it's going up every year. Yeah, like, what do you do with this?
Yeah, his contract's kicking in next year, and it's going to be the Supermax as well for 5 years, I think at around $170, $180 million. So, and he's, you know, obviously had a big history of knee injuries, and he's sort of slowed down this year as well. He's played okay, but he's shown himself not to be a great leader, obviously, with this team. And as Scott Brooks said after last game, they're not showing any effort, and they're not showing any energy, and they just don't seem to give a crap right now.
It doesn't really look like they actually care, right? Like, it's not even Markieff Morris, who's, you know, known for being just an angry dude, doesn't even care at this point. And then you still have, like, what? Otto Porter is, I want to say, the highest paid player this year. I'm sure guys are still salty about it, considering he's hurt right now and hasn't really done much this season either. I don't think anyone's actually performed well other than, like, Jeff Green this year.
I think the team, like, morale, like, especially with John Wall being the leader, that team's never really been like on the up. Like, there was a lot of talk, and Austin Rivers was really hyping the team up, saying that they can contend with any other team in the league in the off season. And like, the team just has players that are all, I don't even know how to exactly put it, but like, they're just players that aren't like on the uprise. They're all players that have kind of stagnated. Like, they haven't really elevated their game. They've kind of hit their ceiling. And at the end of the day, like, as you guys mentioned, John Wall, like, he's on a massive contract. He's injury prone. He's not a good leader, and he relies a lot on his athleticism. And over the next couple of years, like, I can see his athleticism slowing down. If he picks up another injury, he won't be as effective, and you're paying him what you would pay like a KD or what you would pay a LeBron. So there's not much value in another team picking him up or even looking at a potential trade. And this whole team is, like, I would say average. They're just, like, bleh.
Damn. Tell us how you really feel about John Wall. Holy shit, man.
He's not a top 5 point guard. He's not, like, he's getting paid like one, but he's not, like, I would take Mike Connolly over John Wall.
Yeah, but you love
take that, Peter.
Nah, Raj loves the Grizzlies. That doesn't count.
But, like, overall...
This year, he is not top 5. In the
put
past
some respect
years,
on Mike Conley's name, Peter. Yeah. After all the slander that you gave to him before the season started.
We will talk about the Grizzlies later, okay? Let's not go there yet.
I have two things. So, first thing, the only thing that would make this situation that much more hilarious is if they signed Melo. And then they got just to make this team even that much more miserable with him starting next to Dwight Howard, that'd be great. And second, I was actually wrong about, in terms of their management, it hasn't been 10 years. It's been 15 years since Ernie Grunfeld has been the president of basketball operations. And during his tenure, the Wizards have held a record of 536-678, which is a 44% win rate from 2003 until now. And yet he's somehow still employed by this basketball team. 44% win rate over 15 years, and yet he still has a job. Explain.
maybe he's a good golf partner?
He must have something on the owner, man.
It's crazy. Yeah, or either that, or they just really don't care about the Wizards. Not the Capitals. They love the Capitals. Nobody cares about the Wizards.
And he's had 6 seasons with less than 30 wins in the Eastern Conference. In the Eastern Conference. What the hell?
For the amount of shit that we give teams like the Knicks or, you know, the Kings for having bad ownership, they have really messed this one up in Washington. And they never get any of the hate. You know what I mean? Like, they slide under it every year until this year, basically.
Yeah, and I think the thing with, like, the Wizards is, like, I think they were content with being, like, a 500 level team, even below 500, and you're looking at, like, a team where, like, you can see that established players who want to get paid go to Washington, and they get paid, they get a good contract, they put up their stats, and they go home and collect their paychecks. Like, this isn't a team that has a plan, and if their plan is to win with John Wall, Otto Porter Jr., they probably are going to have to re-sign Bradley Beal to an improved contract, especially if you're paying Porter Jr. more than him over the next couple of years. Like, there's no real way that they're going to compete with the Celtics, the Raps, the Bucks. Even Indiana is a better team than them in the East. So, like, they're in a situation right now where I really don't see too many moves they can make this season that will make them better. And I think they're really hoping to dump off a bit of contract money so that hopefully they can land a real free agent like Kevin Durant, or potentially, like, I don't know why Butler would go to Washington, but to land another all-star.
The weird thing is that after Porter, Beal, and Wall, they don't actually have that much money being held up. Like, Austin Rivers is making 12.6 this year, but he's on a 1-year contract now.
Jan Mahinmi
is the only big one. He's got $30 million over this year and the next year combined.
But there's props to him getting paid.
Oh, hell yeah. He's a typical case of a guy who had, like, one good postseason and then got paid. But Markieff Morris is off this year. Jason Smith is off this year. Dwight has a player option for next year, but he's only making 5.3. Like, all their money is just focused at the top between Porter, Beal, and Wall. There's not much they can do about it now, unless they can somehow trade John Wall's massive contract.
Well, what about Bradley Beal? Because I'd say a player who's probably a better asset for teams that are looking to make a deep playoff run is a player like Bradley Beal, like a very good three-point shooter, can play off the dribble, a good defender. He's not top elite defender, but he's a good defender, and overall, like, a team like, dare I say, the Lakers could use a player like him. I don't really think they're going to go out and get him, but they could use a player like him.
To be fair, the Lakers could use anyone except for a power forward / point guard.
They could probably use a power forward.
They could probably use a point guard right now, too.
I meant a guy who plays both positions, goddammit.
So I mean, Beal has the best contract of the three guys. I mean, he's making $25 million a year for the next 3 years. And he's obviously the youngest as well. It's not a bad contract for a guy of his talent level. I mean, he's still 25 years old. He's in the prime of his career. So he's going to be the big target, I think, for these teams. Otto Porter he's making pretty much the same money as Beal. He's making 26 and 27 and 28 the next 3 years. And he hasn't played well this year. But I think that they're better off trying to get off his contract. And one trade that came up today was possibly trading Porter to New Orleans for Julius Randle, who's on a one-year contract with a second-year option, so they can get rid of his money that way. And then obviously get a pretty decent player back with Randle. But Beal's going to be the guy that gets them, you know, their crown jewel back, whether that's, you know, hopefully a high or maybe a couple high first-round picks and a young player or, you know, something of the like, to where I think he has a lot of value around the NBA. And we haven't talked about the situation with Jimmy Butler yet, but I think that Philadelphia jumped the gun by trading for him instead of looking and waiting for a guy like Bradley Beal, who I think would have fit better with Philadelphia.
Why? Why do you think Beal would be better there?
He's younger, he's a better shooter, and I think he just fits better around Simmons and Embiid. I think that they're going to find that Simmons' game doesn't really fit in with Butler's, because both guys need the ball in their hands. And, you know, Butler's a decent spot-up shooter. He doesn't take a lot of them. And Simmons is basically useless off the ball. So I think that they're just going to run into spacing issues unless they're able to get maybe one or two more shooters around these guys. But I just don't see their games fitting together. And then plus, you have to sign Jimmy Butler for 5 years this offseason. And he's a seriously injury-prone player. So I don't like the fit, and I don't like the fact you have to sign him for 5 years, $190 million. So I'm just not a fan of that trade in general for them. But we'll see what happens. That's a whole other topic for another day, I guess.
Going way off topic here.
Yeah, I would agree also just what Josh, like, I think Bradley Beal has a huge appeal to a lot of teams, and he's on a fairly friendly contract. Like, I'm sure he's looking to re-sign it. If not this year, then he'll probably look to get a new contract in the upcoming year, because $25 million for a player of his caliber, he's quite young.
No, he's got 3 years left.
Oh, he's 3 years. Okay, I thought it was two. But yeah, he's played in the NBA, and he's actually put up good numbers for the past 4 or 5 years. And overall, nowadays we're looking at a league that offense, especially three-point shooting, is an asset at his position. And I would say he's one of the better shooting guards in the league. And I think if Washington's looking to actually trade a piece and looking to rebuild, Beal's the player that probably goes.
Let's move on to a less depressing topic.
You want to talk about Philly? They made some news.
They made some news.
I want to know if Philly getting rid of Saric and Covington will hurt them for the rest of the year. Like, how much will it hurt? Because this team already isn't that deep before the trade for Butler. And now they essentially traded 2-for-1, right? So now you have guys like, what's his name, Landry Shamet playing a lot. Or somehow Mike Muscala is getting the primary minutes at power forward. Philly just is so shallow in depth. They have like six guys that they can actually play.
I think that they did lose, like, obviously depth with losing players like Covington, who's a great 3-and-D player, and Saric, who's had actually an awful start to the season, but last year he had quite a good season for a young player who's part of the process. I just think that it's too early to tell how this trade pans out, because I'm sure Philly's going to be looking to add at least one or two more players on the roster to round out their team, because right now there's a huge talent drop once you get past the sixth or seventh man there. Like, unless you really plan on playing Embiid, Simmons, Butler for 35 to 38 minutes a game, night in and night out, like, that's probably going to wear them down over a season. So it's too early to tell.
Yeah, for me, again, I just don't like the trade for Philadelphia. I mean, I get it why they did it. I mean, they have four teams in front of them, or maybe, I guess, three. If you want to count Indiana, it's four. But they have three teams in front of them that made a big leap this year, or looks to make a big leap, especially in the postseason. And with getting Butler, obviously they have three really good players for the postseason and three guys that play exceptional defense. But as you guys have mentioned, they're really low in terms of, you know, their depth. And again, I just don't like the fit with Simmons and Butler with that. They both need the ball in the same types of spots. Both of them like to operate in the mid post to low post areas. And I don't think either guy is really able to space for the other. And I think that they're probably better off right now just sort of separating their minutes, letting them play as a lead guy in different lineups, instead of playing them long, you know, long term with, you know, playing them maybe 20 minutes each, together. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of the fit. And again, I'm not a fan of paying Jimmy Butler for 5 years, $200 million. I think it's the same situation as having John Wall on your team for that amount of money. And they're going to run the same situation in a couple of years when Jimmy Butler gets injured again, or not going to be able to trade him. And then they're going to be paying him for production that isn't even close to what he needs to be putting up. So I don't know. I just don't like the trade.
The thing with Butler that's different, though, is that you can at least guarantee he's going to come into camp in shape. You're not going to have a fat John Wall situation with Jimmy Butler, right? And he can actually shoot. Unlike John Wall, who thinks he can shoot. Butler is like a semi-decent shooter.
I think the issue is more about the age and the injuries, and kind of like their playing style. It's not built for like longevity when you're looking to pay a guy like 5 years super max or max contract. It kind of puts your team in a situation where Washington's in, where you have a piece that you can't move, and a player that might decline sooner rather than later.
Butler is much easier to move than John Wall is, though. Even with, like, say, assume that they have the same kind of contract, he is a much easier player to move. He's a top, what, 15 player when he's healthy?
And John Wall isn't.
No. Not right now.
I think they're still in the same situation, that they're both going to be 30 years old on a 5-year deal for $200 million. Which is not something that any team wants to trade for. Even like a player like Blake Griffin, I mean, they got a pretty good package back for him, but at the same time, he's seriously injury prone. If they try to trade him again, if you know trade implodes, which is going to happen eventually, they're not going to be able to trade him because he has too many years left in his contract and he's already 30, 31 years old. So just giving these guys that are like not quite superstar level players 5-year contracts, it sort of limits your ceiling as a team, especially with Philadelphia, where they have two really good young players who need to develop. And I think that Ben Simmons' development is going to be hurt the most from making this trade.
Or will it help him the most? Because he'll have to learn how to shoot.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go the other way. I think that Ben Simmons can learn a lot from a player like Jimmy Butler.
Like how to be an asshole in the locker room?
That's overrated. We all know that's overrated. That story's been worked up and played over and over again. Like, if anything, that story looks bad because Wiggins and Kat don't have an alpha personality. And so it looks really bad. But when you're talking about professional players that have been alphas probably their entire lives up until they've been in the NBA where they're playing alongside players of similar quality, like, I don't think that's an issue. I think the whole he's a bad teammate narrative has been like blown up by the media. I think he's going to fit in fine with Simmons and Embiid. And I think he offers a little like toughness, a little chip on his shoulder that I would argue Simmons needs to develop. And like, look at him last year in the playoffs. I think he kind of shied away. I thought we saw a player who kind of like under the pressure, under the limelight against Boston kind of shrunk down. I don't think that's going to happen with Jimmy Butler. He might not improve in terms of his stats, but I think mentally he'll become a better player. I think he'll learn how to win, how to like close out games better, learn how to know when to dominate. I think there's a lot of intangibles that Jimmy brings to the table. I don't think it deserves a 5-year max contract, but I think he can become a better player. Maybe just his stats won't show it.
Biggest question now is what they do with Markel Fultz. So
trade him.
Another Anthony Bennett.
Sell low. I don't care about this guy, man.
Perception-wise, though, it's tough for them to do that after trading, you know, a first-round pick alongside, you know, Jason Tatum for Markel Fultz. And now he's, you know, obviously a backup off the bench, and he's playing 15 to 20 minutes. And he doesn't really fit on this team anymore. I mean, he can still play that role, obviously, but you've invested a lot in him. And obviously he hasn't really turned out to be what everyone expected because he has, you know, a serious mental issue or neurological issue. I think that's clear now that it wasn't really an injury. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen that clip when he was just tying his shoes and then he came up and his body just like jolted one way and then came back the other. It was very odd to watch.
What?
You never seen that clip yet?
No, what are you talking about?
I sent it to Raj yesterday. I'll send it to you later. But he was tying his shoes, and then when he got back up, he like his body moved in one direction, then it moved in another. And there was nobody around him when that happened. And then obviously you saw like the free throw for him last game where he was juggling the ball and then threw it up. There's something seriously wrong with him. I don't know what it is yet, but I think it's going to come out in the next year or two that there's some neurological issue with him.
That's crazy. I have not seen this clip.
I wouldn't go that far, but I will say that I think he's just the player that kind of hit a wall. And I know we talked a lot about John Wall, but he just hit a wall in his development. And I think that he's had a year and a half to really kind of develop his game, like get accustomed to the NBA. And I don't expect him to be putting top 5 point guard stats, but there should be a level of improvement in his game. And I think that they're really hoping that he turns this corner, but I think that most people in Philadelphia, probably the coaching staff, I think they're trying to build him up so that even if they get a second round pick for him, that might be a win for them, because at the end of the day, like this, he's really like not shown much improvement in his game. And I think a lot of it has to do with his mental, strength or ability. Like half the time I watch the Sixers play, and he's on the court, it just seems like he's not having fun. Like, it seems like he's mentally checked out. Like, he doesn't seem to, like, know or be aware of his surroundings.
Because he's always scared. He looks like he's shook with every movement that he makes.
Yeah, it's something else. Like, I wouldn't really say a neurologic problem. I think it's just, like, he's just, the stage is too big for him.
If he wasn't the number one pick, do you think he would be in the league?
I think he'd still be in the NBA because he still has potential. I mean, he's still athletic. He's still super smooth off the dribble. It's just, you know, his game hasn't really, like you said, developed at all. And I think that if he wasn't the first pick in the draft, then T.J. McConnell would be taking his minutes because T.J. McConnell's had a much better season than him so far.
Yeah, I'm surprised T.J. isn't actually playing more. I was talking to a friend of ours. You know who I'm talking about. He's, like, really pissed that McConnell's not playing, which is so odd because it's T.J. McConnell. Let's be real here. But he's outplayed Fultz this year.
I will not stand for your slander of TJ McConnell on this podcast.
It's just really weird. The guy is a prototypical, like, white hustle player, and yet he's outperformed the number one pick.
He's a solid backup point guard. He showed in the playoffs against Boston when he started, against Boston in game 3 or 4, when he totally changed that series around, even though they lost, obviously, but they were going to get swept if he didn't play. And they just decided, you know, we're just going to bite the bullet and play him more and not play Fultz at all. So I think that the next step for Philadelphia, I mean, they're obviously in win-now mode with the Jimmy Butler trade. They might as well just try to get whatever they can for Fultz. I think that a landing spot potentially for him could be like a team like Phoenix that has no point guard, or even Orlando. And then hopefully he gets a fresh start and he's able to, you know, build his way back to having good confidence and actually showing something out there.
Yo, he might die in Orlando, man. He might destroy that team. Bring them back down to what they should be. I don't think he does anything for them. I don't believe in this kid at all anymore. And it's a damn shame. Moving on. Since I told you that we would revisit this topic earlier, I guess I gotta take back all my Memphis Grizzlies slander from the summer. They are so outperforming anything I ever thought of them. They have, what, a top 5 defense in the league right now? They're currently sitting at 3rd in the West? Like, this team is killing it. Grit and Grind is back, man.
Yeah, Marcus Gasol has been a beast the last few games. He's just abusing all the younger centers in the West. And Mike Conley is obviously playing great too, and their players around them just know their roles and they play it well. And Jamichael Green is now back in the lineup as well, so they have more depth. And Jaren Jackson Jr. has been very, very good out of the gates for them, and he's exactly what they expected. And, you know, I think besides Doncic, he might be, you know, the most consistent rookie out of everyone else. Even though he doesn't put up the stats, he's been probably a lead shot blocker the first part of the year. And he plays really good positional defense, and he's just exactly what they need at the power forward position. So Memphis, like you said, they're back in the grit and grind mode. They're not playing the same type of style as everyone else is with the pace and space. And it's refreshing to see more teams try to, you know, not do the same thing as everyone else and just try to be their own type of, you know, play their own type of style. Because you don't want to see teams like Milwaukee and Boston that shoot like 50 threes every game go against each other. It can get boring after a while. So seeing different teams like Memphis, even though they don't play like the most aesthetically, great style in watching them, I think it's fun to see them against a team like, you know, a Boston or Milwaukee where they can slow them down with their defense and play a totally different style than them.
How many points do you think Memphis is averaging per game right now?
Probably like 98.
I'm going to guess 100.
103.3. So they're third last in the league. Do you know what their opponent's points per games are?
93?
74. No. 100.8. Leading the league. They barely have a positive differential, and yet they're 10-5. This grit and grind has gone to like another level. And surprisingly, Marc Gasol is actually playing like he's Marc Gasol of 2 or 3 years ago. He's actually dominating centers again. He's playing good defense like we once knew he could. And this team is just, they're well-rounded at this point, too.
And they're a tough team. Like, I've always been kind of a fan of the grit and grind. I think Gasol, Connolly, as you guys mentioned, stepped it up this year. And it's good to see that other young players are being able to adapt into their system. I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. is, again, probably flying under the radar this year in terms of rookies. Like, of course, we all hear about Doncic and Trae Young and so forth. But I think what they're doing in Memphis is kind of they looked at the pieces they had and they knew that they weren't going to be a 3-point shooting team, and they knew that their kind of their whole mantra for the last 4 or 5 years has been defense. So it's refreshing to see. I'm all for it. I think a team that probably should look at Memphis and probably go back to their ways is a team like Utah, who's probably been struggling more than we all expected. But no, Memphis has been a pleasant surprise. There's been quite a few surprises in the West. But I still think Memphis struggles to get to 500, over the course of a season, just because, other teams in the West are probably going to turn it around, especially mainly Houston and so forth, and New Orleans. But I think it's pleasant to see. And I think that they're going to be a team that probably has like between 37 and 40 wins.
Damn, that's harsh.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. They're already 10-5.
Yeah, but I just think that other teams in the West are going to pick it up, and talent-wise, they're not on the same level as some of those other teams. And I'm all for Memphis, but talent-wise, they're definitely exceeding expectations. Like, this was a team that was probably expected to win 35 games tops and probably be a bottom dweller in the West, but I think they'll be pushing probably for 40 wins.
So you don't think they make the playoffs?
I don't think so. I think they're probably like a 10-11 seed.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I think before the season started, none of us really expected them to make the playoffs, and they've gotten off to a great start, obviously, but as you mentioned, with their point differential, they're not really a team that is going to blow teams out, obviously. They've been relying on Conley and Gasol performing well in crunch time, which they have so far, and they've got great chemistry, obviously. But in this league, you got to be able to score, right? And they've gotten off to a great start at home. They're 6-1. But I think, as Raj said, I think the law of averages is just going to catch up to them because they don't have the talent level of other teams. And I think once teams start making the other guys like Kyle Anderson and Garrett Temple try to, you know, make shots instead of Gasol and Conley running the pick and roll every play, I think that things might turn around. And as you guys mentioned with the West, there's, you know, I think 3 games between the 11th seed to the first seed right now. So it's really jumbled up right now. I don't really think we have a good gauge as to who's going to be at the top of the West yet anyway.
Yeah, I guess so. But one of the things about the regular season is that teams don't really adjust game to game. Coaches will just run the same kind of defense, same kind of offense throughout the week, throughout the month or whatever, just because there's so much to do throughout the rest of the season. It's not like in the playoffs where you adjust for the team, you know, every night or every other night or whatever. So just because of that, I think that because of their hot start, I think Memphis will actually, they could squeeze into like the 7 or 8 seed at this rate.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they could be a 7 or 8 seed or they could be out of the playoffs. It's hard to say right now because the West is so jumbled. But at the same time, as Raj said, I think that they're just outperforming their talent level. And I think that you need depth and overall talent to get through the regular season. So when Conley or Gasol has a bad game or a really bad game, then you have another guy that steps up, and I'm not sure if they really have that over the course of the year. So I think come like January, February, they're going to start losing these games that they've been eking out so far.
No, I also, I'm a kind of a firm believer in the NBA, like the regular season. There's some destinations that teams go to, and they just, like, they're not ready to play because you're not playing on prime time. You're not playing against, like, superstars. Like, you don't bring your A game. And, like, I would say that Toronto used to be that kind of franchise that a lot of teams would come up to Toronto and probably not play their best ball. And sometimes the Raptors are able to kind of play their game and squeak out a victory. I feel like Memphis is a team like that, where a lot of teams are going into Memphis, maybe resting a player, or kind of just expecting it to be an easier game because, like, they're rarely on prime time. Like, Gasol and Mike Conley aren't going to be flashy players that you really want to show that your team's better against. So I feel like they're kind of benefiting from other teams trying to figure it out. Like mainly Denver, Oklahoma, New Orleans. They're just more talented teams. Utah. Like, these teams are going to probably leapfrog them in the standings come February, March. And I just think that Memphis is really kind of relying a lot on effort, and effort only gets you so far in the NBA over an 82-game season.
And to bring this back full circle, because Memphis has shown themselves to be in win-now mode because they decided not to, you know, trade either Conley or Gasol last year when they were tanking, I think that this is a team that should be trying to trade for Bradley Beal. If they got a player like Bradley Beal with those two guys, like, they would be a problem in the West.
Let's get that Chandler Parsons for Bradley Beal trade going.
Oh, please send Parsons to Washington.
Yeah, I'm sure Washington would love to have Parsons there.
Send all the NBA problems to Washington. That's what we should be doing. Send Melo there, get Parsons over there as well.
Parsons have isn't Dwight a Howard. Problem.
Oh, he's a problem.
He's just injured all the time. He's not a problem.
He's a financial problem.
It's not his fault that teams drive dump trucks full of cash up to his driveway. What are you going to do, say no? I don't blame the guy for that.
When the guy spends more time modeling than working on his game, you got a problem there.
He's a jack of all trades.
Master of none.
Exactly. All right, let's get out of there. Let's go to Utah, man. Can someone please explain to me how Donovan Mitchell shoots 35 times in a game and does not record a single assist? Anybody? I'm just a little confused.
Crickets.
You know. How does that happen?
Yeah, the weird thing is, his teammates that game actually shot pretty well. So, despite him shooting 35 times, most of the starters actually shot over 50% that game. So, him not having an assist is like a weird anomaly. But the next game when they went to Boston, they beat that Celtic ass. So, I thoroughly enjoyed that beatdown.
That Celtic ass. Damn.
No, I think Utah's fine. I mean, they started the year. I mean, teams are shooting a ridiculous percentage against them in the mid-range so far this season. And I think that's obviously going to come down. And I think, with the rule change, with not being able to put any hands on anybody the first 10 games of the season, that really hurt their defense, obviously. So I think as, you know, they adjust to the new rules and referees stop calling the holding as the season goes on, because we know that the points of emphasis throughout the season, like last year was with traveling, right? And after about 10 or 20 games, they totally forgot about that. The year before that, it was with flopping. They handed out maybe 5 flopping fines, and then they stopped doing it. So
I miss flopping fines. Those are great.
Yeah, I know. Like, when's the last one that happened? I think Marcus Smart last year in the playoffs.
No, someone got it this year, I think.
It's probably Marcus Smart again.
I think it was. Either Smart or Lance.
He's the worst. I hate watching him. But getting back on topic with Utah, he'd be a great fit in Utah, by the way. But getting back on topic with Utah, they'll be fine. I mean, I predicted that they'd be like a second or third seed in the West. And they've gotten through a tough part of their schedule so far. And they had a big win and a back-to-back in Boston. So I think it's only a matter of time before they get it together. They have a lot of talent on their bench, too. So they're a pretty good regular season team. And I still think that they could be the second seed in the West.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way and say that Utah is, I think they, I won't say they peaked, but I think that there are some questions to be asked, because I think what's happening with their offense, especially with the league just putting up incredible numbers this year, is we're looking at a team that really has one playmaker that can create his own shot, and that's Donovan Mitchell. Everyone else kind of has to play in a system, and it has to have someone create a shot for them. And I think that they really need someone off the bench who can put up at least 10 to 12 points a game. Someone like, dare I say, Lou Williams, but someone who can just create offense. Because right now, I think the Jazz over like the next month or two they'll find their defense again. They'll definitely be a powerhouse at home. But if they really want to take that next step and push Golden State, be one of the top two or three seeds in the West, they need to have a bit more offense, because winning games with like 100 points of offense or like 110 is going to be difficult now with the current NBA with the rate of team shooting the three-point ball. So I think Utah has some questions to answer, and I think they're looking to add probably a player in a bench role that can score.
You mean you don't believe in Jay Crowder carrying your benches off?
Am I wrong?
Yeah, I guess so. I think one of their other issues is the fact that Ricky Rubio has gone back to earth with his shooting. Josh, I know we talked about it the other day. Like, his shooting this year has just been awful. You know what I mean? Like, he had one hot year. Everyone thought he was going to be great. And then the playoffs happened. He got hurt. Obviously, that's when Mitchell took over the team's offense. And then he never really let the reins go after that. And now Rubio is sort of just standing there like a spot-up shooter, but he's obviously not a spot-up shooter.
Yeah, I think as the season went on last year, they found different ways to get Rubio the ball on the run, which helped him a lot. And I think this year, teams have sort of scouted them to limit that. And he's having to play, you know, high pick and roll more often, and teams are just laying way back again, and he's not making his shots. And at certain parts of the year, he goes full supernova, where he has four or five games where he's like 28-12. And then he goes back to earth right afterwards. He's one of the most inconsistent players in the league. And when he plays well, Utah's a top three team in the NBA probably. But when he doesn't play well, then as Raj said, you have to rely on Mitchell to do everything, which became a huge problem in the playoffs for them when Rubio was out, obviously. So I think they do need another scorer. And what I'm hoping for is that Kemba Walker just gets tired of his situation in Charlotte, because he'd be a perfect fit in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
He'd be a good fit in a lot of places, but in Utah, he'd be great.
Yeah. If they had a point guard that could actually shoot, my God, and handle the rock, whew.
Yeah, they'd be unbelievable.
What do you think that Utah ends up at the end of the year? Do you still think they end up as a top three?
I think so. I think they'll still be a top three seed. Like I said before, I mean, with their defense, the teams are shooting unsustainably well against them, and they're 2-4 at home, too. So those two things are going to turn around. And I think they're eventually going to go on a run where they win a bunch of games with their depth and their defense. So I think that they'll be a top three, maybe top four seed. They'll be a home court advantage team for sure this year.
Yeah, I look at them probably as a 4 or 5 seed. Like, I think their slow start will probably end up hurting them in the end. Now they're sitting at 500. But like, a question that I always ask myself is Utah a better team than Denver? Because like, those two teams, I would say that, obviously not if they played head to head, but over the course of a year, I'd say that Denver is more on the up, and I think Utah is a little more on the down. Like comparing last season to this year. And I think that if Utah doesn't address their scoring, because again, you're relying on a second year player in Donovan Mitchell, who I think could carry the load, but night in and night out, like, you're going to have inconsistent nights where he just shoots the ball poorly, or, it's just not enough for him to carry the offense. And think that you're looking at a player in Joe Ingles that can probably give you a good 15 to 20 points a game, but you need another source of scoring. And unfortunately, Gobert's offensive game is pretty much limited to put back dunks and a few layups here and there. And no one else on the bench is going to provide that spark.
Speaking of shallow benches, how do we feel about Houston letting go of Carmelo? Deciding to part ways with each other, if you will. After saying that he was sick for like a week and then, you know, just waving his ass. Is he even like, is Melo still an NBA player at this rate?
No.
Ooh. That was quick.
I know Melo is one of your favorite players, Peter. Not this Melo, the Denver Melo.
Denver Melo was unbelievable. Even New York Melo was good. Okay.
Yeah.
This Melo is unrecognizable.
This isn't Melo, man. This is Melo. I don't like Melo.
But I feel bad for Melo, because I felt like he was a bit of a scapegoat for their slow start.
Easily. James Harden came into camp way overweight. Chris Paul is playing hurt. And somehow Melo is to blame for all this? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, it, and then the timing too, like, Harden ended up missing a few games, I think 4 games through injury.
Chris Paul punched a guy in the face. How is this Melo's fault?
Yeah, suspended for 2 games, and then you're expecting Melo, who went and accepted his bench role, to, like, carry the team?
Yeah.
You know, the comparison I'll make with Melo is he is like Reek from Game of Thrones.
What is your name? My name is Greek.
Whoa.
I think that...
Hold on. Please pick your words carefully.
Well, I'm going to compare the loss of Reek's... I think it was his dick, right? Or was his dick and testicles? Or was it both?
I can't tell if you're serious or not.
Well, Melo lost his game, just like Reek lost his testicles, you know, a couple seasons ago in Game of Thrones. And ever since then, he just hasn't been the same player, and he hasn't been able to adjust to his role, so...
What are you saying? How has he not adjusted to his role?
Melo or Reek?
Oh, man. You're so disrespectful.
No, but seriously, like...
compared these guys.
All right. I'll make an NBA comparison with Melo. He's like Allen Iverson when Iverson was 36 or 37 and he went to Memphis. You know, Iverson was still trying to be a superstar back then. And Memphis is just telling him, like, you need to come off the bench. You just need to play the score for 15 to 20 minutes a game. And Iverson just wouldn't accept that role. So I think since Melo lost his game a few years ago, he hasn't been able to become what everyone wanted him to be, which is Olympic Melo. And being a guy that can just spot up on the perimeter and hit spot-up shots, which is something that he was really good at, even despite his, you know, his struggles the last couple of years. He was still shooting a high percentage on spot-up shots, and he just would never accept that role. And obviously his defense is maybe the worst in the NBA thus far this year. He's just been getting roasted by guards on switches, so.
But they want him to carry the second unit. How can you be a spot-up guy carrying the second unit?
I don't think that was really his role. I mean, they started off where he was coming off the bench and he was playing with either guard, obviously, and he was taking a lot of spot-up shots. But when he started, you know, trying to do the off-the-dribble stuff, that's when he got himself into trouble again. Just like last year.
Nah, man. It's kind of difficult when Chris Paul and James Harden aren't carrying the teams like they're supposed to. Like, what are you going to do when your team is constantly losing, you guys can't score, and whoever your guard is that's supposed to feed you the ball isn't feeding you the ball properly? Obviously, you're going to go to what you know best, or what you perceive to know best. You know what I mean?
I know that you're a Melo supporter, but no, the stats show that when he was in the lineup, Houston's defensive rating was absolutely abysmal. And when he was off the court, they had a higher net rating. They had a positive net rating.
Okay, I'm not talking
and
about
while he was on the floor, his offense was just, it was bad. It is what it is. And I'm glad they cut the cord with him early instead of just letting this roll on throughout the rest of the year where Houston was just continuing to struggle. I mean, obviously they had some issues at the start of the year with other things as well. It's not just his fault, obviously, but he's a big issue off the bench for them. And they cut the cord, so. Props to Daryl Morey for doing so.
I think they gave him way too many responsibilities at this point.
No, but he wants that, right?
No,
he
doesn't.
Wants to be that guy.
No, that's why he went off the bench.
He accepted that role because he knew if he didn't that they cut him, and they cut him anyway because he's not any good anymore.
No, man, that's different. You're telling me that he's to blame more so than Chris Paul being hurt and getting suspended? Or James Harden?
I'm not saying that.
No,
James Harden
is literally sweating out champagne during these games. And you're telling me Carmelo is more to blame?
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that he is not willing to accept what he is at this point. And no matter what team signs him, if anyone does sign him, I don't think that anyone's going to. But if any team does sign him, they're going to run the same problem with what happened the last 2 years with Oklahoma and Houston. He cannot accept the role in today's NBA pace and space era of just being a spot-up guy and a guy that comes in for 15 minutes a game that can light it up, and if he's not playing well, then you sit him. He's just never going to accept that role. So I don't think that he's going to be around for much longer, if at all.
I think it's more of an issue with his ability now rather than his accepting of a role. You know what I mean?
Like his body can't do what the coaches want him to do.
Yeah, he's obviously not as fast as he used to be. He obviously doesn't rebound like he used to, and he obviously doesn't shoot the same. So, like, talent-wise, skill-wise, completely understand. I agree. He's not what he used to be, and he's easily a fringe player at this point. But I'm not going to say that he wasn't accepting his role, because that's exactly what he did. They told him he was going to come off the bench, and he's like, okay, I'm going to do my best to come off the bench. He obviously said that he was having issues with it, adjusting to it, but he still did it. It's not like he was pouting the whole time.
No, but again, even in that role, he didn't play well.
Yeah, which I just have an issue with us blaming him from a mental aspect rather than a skill aspect.
And Mike D'Antoni said he was great, and he did everything that they wanted him to, so we have to trust him.
They're not going to slander the guy on his way out, though.
I'm just fucking with you.
Mike D'Antoni was crossing his fingers during that press conference.
Yeah, that was such a weird way to end this short-term relationship. But on the other side, Houston's won a few games in a row. They're back to 500.
People jumped the gun with them way too early. I mean, they're still a really good team, and I think they still have a trade to be made as well. They're going to make a trade at the deadline or get a guy that was bought out. And, you know, they've shown the last couple of games that their switching defense does work as long as the guys who are playing on the court, like Gary Clark has replaced Carmelo off the bench now. And even despite him being a rookie, he still knows where to be on the floor, and he's taking the shots that are there. So I think as Eric Gordon, James Harden, and Chris Paul's shooting percentages, you know, start to subside and actually go up a little bit, I think that once that happens, Houston's going to be probably a 2 or 3 seed again. And if they were able to get one more player on the wing, especially, they're going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs.
I think Chris Paul and James Harden are both sliding way under the radar of who's to blame for these things. You know what I mean?
There's nothing to blame. It's early in the season. People are overreacting.
It doesn't matter because these games still affect your standing at the end of the year. Right? Like, no matter how much you want to say it's still early and blah, 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 a win is a win during the season.
Yeah, but yeah. Again, as we talked about before, with the West being all jumbled up, they're 8-7 right now, and they're 3 wins away from being, you know, the best team in the conference. So it's not like they're way behind the 8-ball right now.
No, but it could also mean them not having home court advantage.
Nah, I disagree with that.
I also don't think Houston is as good as they were last year, and I think that more teams have figured out how to play against them. It doesn't mean that they're going to win games, but I think that Houston's not going to be as many games where they've blown out an opponent like they did last year. And I think they're going to be like a 3-4 seed, probably going to lock up the 3rd seed in the West. But there's some good, well-balanced teams in there that will probably give Houston a lot of problems. So unless they do add that 3-and-D guy, kind of like their Trevor Ariza or their Mbuamate,
Perfect.
That's enough.
I tried. But like I think that they're gonna struggle. The sooner they get that handled, I think the better. But I just think that they're not gonna be as effective as they were last year, and I think more teams in the West are gonna be just as good as them.
You know, low key, outside of watching like the worst teams in the NBA play basketball, One matchup that's absolutely brutal to watch is like, and when you never expect it either, is Houston against Golden State. Because when they switch every single matchup on the ball, and both teams just like play down the shot clock to the end and play half-court basketball, it's brutal to watch. I mean, the Western Conference Finals is fun and everything, but their first 2 games this year against each other, man, it was disgusting basketball.
Yeah, it's just switch and then hit the mismatch.
Isolate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's boring, man. These teams need some variety. I want an Indiana where DeMontis Sabonis is the best player.
Well, that's random.
Yeah,
exactly. You got a team or something?
It's just the point, man. You want some variety in the games, right? You don't want teams who have the exact same strategies going against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this right now, man. You guys have anything else you want to touch on? Anybody want to talk about how good Giannis is or how Paul George is leading OKC to 9-1 in the last 10 without Russ for a few of those games?
Nobody cares about Paul George. Let's get to Stats Corner.
Let's get to Stats Corner. Pew, pew, pew.
You got to give me some music when you edit this podcast.
I'll find something, man. Don't worry about it.
So this week in Stats Corner, we're going to keep it very simple since we've been away for 3 to 4 weeks now. So
relax.
Due to somebody taking an extended vacation, sort of like James Harden has the first couple of weeks of the season.
You're legit gone for like a week and a half. Let's relax. Chill out.
Well, it feels like it's been a month, so we'll do two different stats today. So the first one I'm going to quiz you guys on is usage percentage. So in terms of individual players' usage percentage, so far this season, can you name the top five players in terms of usage percentage in the NBA right now? So who has the highest usage around the league?
Giannis, obviously.
Giannis is number three. You are correct. Let's see if you can get it in eight guesses.
James Harden.
That's correct. Number one at 34%, which is insane.
What's my prize?
You get a cookie.
A Subway cookie?
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that.
They're the best ones.
They are. Those are costly, though.
Give me... Oh, really? No, I don't think so. AD? I don't think so.
No, he's actually not on the list of the top 10.
I didn't think so. He's been hurt for a lot of the year.
What about Westbrook?
Westbrook is not on there. I don't think he qualifies because he hasn't played enough.
I see. Yeah,
just think of the top scorers in the NBA. So far, you've missed two. So you have one more to go.
Dame?
No, he's Dame? Not in the top 10.
What? Yeah, your list is flawed, man.
It is not. You guys are missing two of the big ones. I think they're the two top scorers in the NBA right now.
LeBron James.
LeBron is number 9.
Kemba Walker.
Kemba's number 6, just outside the top 5.
Wow.
Who was scorching hot to start the season on an absolutely deplorable team?
Blake Griffin?
Wow, you're calling Detroit deplorable when Peter's here.
I don't blame him. It's kind of true.
Blake Griffin's not on the list.
Wow, what the hell? LaVine?
You guys struggling. What was that?
LaVine?
Yeah, LaVine's number 2. He's the one I was talking about.
Oh.
And then you have one more big one who gets the ball a ton, and we've talked about his team earlier in the podcast.
Joel Embiid.
Correct. He's number 4. Nice. Who's number 5?
Oh, your favorite player, DeMar DeRozan?
He is not.
I just wanted to throw his name out there for you.
It's Victor Oladipo. Victor Oladipo.
Really?
He is at 30.5 in terms
Jesus
of percentage.
Jesus Christ, that's high.
Yep.
I guess, yeah, I mean, indeed.
He's their guy.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Indy this year either. I don't like their team.
They can't really score enough, especially in the playoffs. They need one more guy, like a lot of different teams around the NBA.
Yeah, they need Kemba Walker. Everyone needs Kemba Walker.
A lot of teams do.
Beal.
Or Bradley Beal, yeah.
Yep. So the next stat we'll go to, we'll just keep it simple. Who are the top 5 best offenses in the NBA right now, team-wise?
Golden State.
Golden State is at number 2 now after their deplorable West Coast trip in Texas.
Doesn't New Orleans?
Yes, they're number 5.
New Orleans is the top scoring team. Oof.
Give me the Bucks.
They are number 1.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes.
There's going to be one surprise team who has been a huge surprise thus far this season in the top 5.
Sacramento.
Sacramento is not in the top 5. Sacramento is 15.
They do put up. Okay, they put up a lot of points, just yeah. Not very efficient.
They slowed down the last 5 games, though. They were in the top 5, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Last time we did this, yeah.
Yeah.
3 to 4 weeks, my ass. Who could it be?
Portland.
Portland, no. They're actually just outside the top 5 at number 6.
Oof.
It's Toronto?
Correct. Number 3, your future NBA champion Toronto Raptors.
Wow, okay.
Old.
Wow.
You're waiting the whole episode to say that.
I've been holding back. We haven't talked about them at all, so.
And
who's the biggest surprise team, or one of the biggest surprise teams thus far this season that has really gone under the radar?
Is it Chuck the Condor?
Which is what team, Peter?
The Microsoft Paperclips.
Yes, you are correct. They're at number 4. Well done, well done.
Damn, they're 4th offense?
They're 4th in offense. They've had, I think, 3 games in a row where they put up a ton of points. So
Holy. They're
finally stuck into the top 5, and they're 10-5 on the season, too. So they've been a big surprise thus far.
Are they going to make the playoffs?
No.
Who has a better season? Memphis or the Clippers?
Memphis.
Clippers.
Really?
Nah, that Danilo Gallinari injury is right around the corner.
Yeah. And Lou Williams is going to slow down, man. Someone's going to learn that he only goes right.
Really?
After 15 years, I'm not sure that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, how is that still a thing? Lou Williams is actually carrying this team through some like tough overtime wins.
He's been their closer.
God. He's a clutch god, this guy. He's going to repeat for six, man. I don't know if he got it last year, but he's going to get it again this year.
Yeah, he's probably going to have a third wife, too, at some point this season. He deserves
for
it.
For every sixth man?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be insane. Every time he wins, he just adds one. What a boss.
Keep piling up those trophy wives.
Oh, dear. All right, that was a good job in, what are we calling this? Stats Corner?
Stats Corner, come on now.
Yo, my bad, man. I haven't listened to our stuff enough to know Stats Corner. Anybody else got anything to add?
The Raptors are going to the ship, baby.
Oh, bold take. Raj, what's your bold take?
Oof. Way to put me on the spot here.
Chuck the Condor is the greatest mascot in the history of mascots.
No, yo, don't disrespect Benny the Ball. Come on.
Or the Raptor.
Yeah, or the Raptor who like tore his meniscus. Okay? Do not insult these legends of mascots.
Or that scary baby from New Orleans.
King Cake Baby.
King Cake, yeah.
I'm going to New Orleans in March. Trying to see the King
trying
Cake
to
baby.
Trying to meet up, huh?
Yeah, trying to link up with the King Cake Baby. Legit, I'm actually gonna like try to find that shop and go. I want to see what it's all about. See if that mascot just like walks around like the Chick-fil-A cap.
Yo, you should get Chick-fil-A. The costume for Halloween next year.
That'd be messed up. Imagine seeing that just walking down the road.
Yeah, you would scare so many kids, and there'd be so many accents around you.
So much candy just being dropped.
The anarchy.
Raj, you find your take yet? I stalled as long as I could.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say that the Clippers are gonna be a playoff team, and they're probably gonna be one spot below the Lakers, probably.
So 6-7, 7-8.
Yeah, probably 7-8, 6-7.
Wow, Lakers and Clippers playoffs.
I hope they play each other in the playoffs and the Clippers destroy them.
When was the last time we saw Clippers-Lakers playoffs?
1973.
I was going to say like 2012, but sure.
I don't think it's ever happened in the last 20 years, has it?
I thought it happened that year where the Lakers narrowly squeezed in. Remember when there was like Kobe Powell, Dwight, and Steve Nash? They barely squeezed in that year, right?
I don't think they played the Clippers, though.
No, they didn't play, but I know that they both made it.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant playing against each other.
No, they're never going to play against each other. That would mean at least one of the teams has to be a 4 seed, and neither of these teams are going to be a 4 seed at the same time.
Lakers fans are shaking their heads at you right now.
Yeah, Lakers fans can ask my D, man.
Whoa.
The Lakers are not going to be anywhere close at home court.
Are you censoring the words now on this podcast? Why don't you just go ahead and say it?
That's how I say it, man.
Come on, man.
Nah, man. Keeping this PG, bitch. Alright, I think that's enough for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. You know, all the podcast networks. And until next time, peace.